insisted on briefing the president this time about what happens on day five, and what happens on week two, and what happens in month three. And so far they've been able to prevail, but we have to give them every help that we can. One of the questions, the $64 questions, is what can we do to reinforce those senior military officers? And there is something we can do, something very tangible, and that is get impeachment proceedings started.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when the flag goes up and the president and or Cheney order Fallon to send the planes, send the missiles into Iran,
yeah,
he needs something to hang his hat on. He needs to be able to say, wait a second, wait a minute, this isn't about any threat to the United States. Does this have to do with saving the political hide of a deserter during Vietnam and a five-time draft-deferred fellow who had other priorities? Is that what this is about? I'm sorry, Mr. President. Put my name on top of the retirement list. I won't carry out your orders. I'm going down to the Associated Press this afternoon and tell them what you've just told me to do.
Absolutely, and that's why impeachment is so critically important. It's a requirement because we've had crass criminality going on here from international law, national law, and it's time for us to not take it. I remember both Phil and Dan Berrigan speaking and saying, you know, with everything we've done, we have never done a protest that was proportional to the damage that has been done by our military. And I think we have to reflect on that.
And we have to be willing, as Dan said, to sacrifice friendships,
yeah,
to sacrifice good honor, as he puts it,
yeah,
to be in ill repute, to do the right thing. And it's come to that, and I have a certain confidence that the American people is up to that, but frankly, I'm not quite sure. So we need to encourage folks to get out there and do something.
Well, that's right, and that's what we're very happy to say, in spite of the fact that Britney Spears has had more media than the entire world peace movement put together. In spite of that, the peace movement is in every small community in the United States. There are 50, 60 vigils in Los Angeles every week, whether they're spoken about in the media or not. 70% of our people are tired of this disaster, this catastrophe that we've got ourselves in. I've been privileged today to have Ray McGovern as a guest. He served as a CIA analyst from the administrations of John F. Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush, and has been such an outspoken critic of the crimes that have been committed by government. And thank you so much for being with us, Ray. We hope to talk to you again in the future. That's it for Sprouts. I'm Blaise Bonne Payne of KPFK in Los Angeles. Production assistance came from KPFK and the Office of the Americas. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Many thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula, that's U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org. That's Ursula at Pacifica.org. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's 2 hours of Bathurst Pier's Broadsides, the March 27, 2008 edition. Coming up first, we hope, a special call-in from Jillian Greensight and a little music until she does. Stay tuned.
And the man is always smiling as he leans against his Cadillac and offers you your money back if you can beat his price. And the woman's so beguiling, she rubs against your Chevrolet and offers you some repartee and motor trend's advice. And the heads are always spinning as a preacher holds a pearly gate for those who feed the sun. They fit with hopes to raise that dead, and the dogs are always grinning as fleas and ticks destroy their coats while cowboys feed them the bug slugs and pat them on the head. And the lawns are always happy, and the kids are all well fed, and the neighbors are as friendly as can be. The fettuccine spreads the word's mouth apart, being lots of nutriments, and every boxer just what he deserves. And the girls in string bikinis chase an never-ending puberty, while lifeguards sitting hubrisly blow whistles at their curves. And the kids are all in college, and the lawns are all well-groomed, and the clothes are all as bright as white can be. And all the pretty people in their latex gloves, living fortified and sugar-free, riding off together in billboard love.
And that's Billboard Love, and on the scene we have Community Love with Jillian Greenside. Hi, Jillian.
Hello, Robert.
So you made the Sentinel today, and your photo made the Sentinel, too. Hey, how come you and not certain other attractive elderly guys? What was that all about?
Well, the Sentinel, I guess the reporter was at the tree hearing and followed up with the story in today's paper, which isn't really that accurate. You know, makes it sound as though I'm standing in the way of everybody who's ever wanted to cut a tree down. And actually, I've only made 6 tree appeals in 25 years, so that's trying to save 6 trees. And during a 5-year period when the city kept data in the Parks and Recreation Department, people applied to cut down 1,500 heritage trees, and permits were granted for 1,350. So it's not that hard to cut down a heritage tree in Santa Cruz, and we've lost a lot of them. So my effort's actually rather small, but I guess they wanted to, you know, blow it up into a big thing.
Well, the actual story, as I caught it, was that, you know, the real issue had to do with the change in the cost of just filing an appeal on it, whether a tree should be cut down, but whether any commission ruling should be overruled, whether it could be appealed to city council, which was previously $50 and is now...
Or nothing. Well, it's now $500, but it's $500 each step of the way because, for example, for a tree appeal, and this may not apply to every appeal because some of them originate in the plan commission, but tree appeals start at the zoning administrator. So it's $500 to appeal it to the planning commission, and then if you lose there, $500 to appeal to council. So and it usually would go in that frame. So
previously, yes. How much had it been?
It would have been $1,000.
In the past, how much would it have been?
Oh, in the past? Well, if it was in the coastal zone, it was free. And then outside of the coastal zone, it was $50. So most of my appeals have been free because they were in the coastal zone, so they've cut that part of it out as well. The only exception is if a project is appealable to the California Coastal Commission. For example, the double shot, you know, that ride at the boardwalk, that was appealable to the Coastal Commission, so therefore you don't pay anything. But there's very, very few projects, if you want to use that term, that are appealable to the Coastal Commission. It's a very strictly defined appeal.
How many commissions have their actions appealed in an average year? Do you have any sense of that?
I don't. It's a good question. I mean, just observing city council meetings, it's not many. I don't think, but I may be wrong. You know, I'm just my impression on that.
But this new, what do you call it, increase by a factor of 10, multiplying by 10 the amount of money required to do an appeal will appear for every single appeal that's outside the Coastal Commission's purview.
Exactly, which, and I think it's outrageous. And I was only told this at the last minute because planning department was a bit confused, I guess. And so when I went to hand in my appeal, I was told, and $500, please. It's sort of consistent with shortening the time that people have to speak on items, and that doesn't only apply to oral communications. It applies to, you know, people wanting to speak on any item on the agenda. So it really is, I think, shutting down public participation. That's pretty obviously why, and or the effect. And I think, you know, that's the aim as well.
Well, I know that Mayor Coonerty, with, I think, Shadow Mayor Rotkin in the background, I always regard him as a key figure. I mean, he often seems to be running the council meetings from the side, although Coonerty's, you know, seems more of taking an active hand now. But, the 3 years ago, Rotkin changed the rules to allow you to speak only 3 minutes on a, or a total of 5 minutes on all consent agenda items put together, which there can be anywhere from, 8 to 32 or 33 items. It's more than half the agenda usually. And it's usually put in the middle of the afternoon.
Right.
So most people can't come to those meetings anyway. So it's a way of also cutting down public comment. When Coonerty came in, he introduced new rules, which we've talked about on this program, and which actually went into effect, and I'm going to actually be playing some of the tape from the City Council in a few minutes, which said you can't talk at all on any specific item and allow that to have a public hearing unless the council agrees. But but in order to get around the Brown Act, which says you must be allowed to speak on every item on the agenda, they put in a short 2-minute period before all the consent agenda items, during which you have to do the following things: A, ask for agenda items you want to be removed so they can be discussed in detail so you can really talk about them, and then get the permission of the council to have that done. And then at the same time, and this is their out around from the Brown Act, which says you have to be allowed to talk on the items, you can talk about the items. So if you were going to talk about, let's say, the 16 items on the agenda on Tuesday, which most people wouldn't, but let's assume you wanted to, you had to have 8 seconds per item if you were to use Coonerty's 2 minutes in an effective way.
And that is where you, am I right, that's you'd be giving your rationale for taking them off or be speaking to the substance?
Here's the thing. He first said when he brought this new procedure in a month or two ago, you can't talk about the substance of the items. Then he realized that that would mean that there might be no opportunity to talk about the substance of the items at all, and that would be just a straight violation of the state law, which guarantees us access to the agenda as members of the public, the right to say something, not much, but something. So he changed that to say, well, you can A, both talk about the take it off, or you can also talk about the substance of it if you want. So that means you can spend your time trying to codge the council into taking off the one or two or three items you want to talk about, or you can talk about the items themselves or do a little of both.
Right, that's very limiting.
And at the last council meeting on Tuesday, I guess the evening session was taken up with the tree hearing.
Yes, that was all that was on the agenda. In fact, I mean, haven't we all noticed how the evening agendas are getting so short?
Right. Suddenly everything is crammed onto the afternoon agenda, which has a number of effects. First, of course, it denies people the ability to speak on the agenda items if they're working during the day.
Absolutely.
And then secondly, it gives the mayor a rationale for saying, you know, we haven't got much time because of all these items to talk about, therefore we're cutting back public comment time in the afternoon. It's a brilliant scheme to, streamline the process to make sure that people that the council doesn't want to hear from, which I think includes most of the public, don't have to be heard from. I think they feel that the staff can run the city pretty well in the absence of the community. And in a way, it's more honest that way, because that's what's been happening for 2 decades or more anyway. But it's just becoming much more overt, and they're kind of they're cutting it off. I mean, and they've kind of prepared the way for this by letting people like Michael Tomasi, who's the grizzled veteran who talks about being the king of marijuana and so forth, kind of wander around the agenda without staying relevant. I mean, I think actually a lot of what he says is relevant, but on the other hand, a lot of it isn't.
Yeah, it's a mixture.
So instead of holding him to that, they use him as a kind of a straw man to say, look, if we allow people to talk on the agenda, this is what you're going to get. And it sort of conditions the public to believe, well, I'm glad they're cutting it short so we can get on and hear what Mike Rotkin has to say, or what Cynthia Matthews has to say, the wiser heads, what the staff members have to say.
Yeah, no, I think there is an attitude that the public is a bit annoying, and I could sort of hear that. I was at one council meeting and oral communications was over, and I can't remember the exact words that the mayor used, but it definitely... you didn't have to read between the lines too much. It was definitely, well, thank goodness that's over. Now let's get on to, the ice. I think it was awards for writing, literature awards. There is a level of frustration, level of contempt. And you know, I can understand being in that position. If it's the same people saying the same things, it gets old. But, you know, that's the nature of the job. You know, and your response to that is not to try and get rid of it, you know, but and respond to it. And even if there are some situations which people might think is valid to truncate it, it just means everyone's rights go out the window. So, yeah, no, I'm pretty appalled, as obviously, the way things are going. And this appeal business of making it so expensive is indefensible, I think.
Well, it's interesting. I'm looking on the Sentinel website where there are now 57 comments after Genevieve, what's her name?
Bookwalter,
yeah, her story
well,
about you.
Well, spare me them.
Yeah, I'm looking them over. But I notice mostly is it's all about trees, which, of course, is what the headline of the article was. And indeed, that was what the subject of the hearing was. But the significance, as I think you and I brought out in this conversation, is much, much, much more. It has to do with all hearings.
Well, I was a glutton for punishment. I did go and look at some of those blogs, which it's really disturbing because there's some incredibly racist and sexist people who write in, and they seem less inhibited in that forum because they can, most of them hide behind anonymity. But I did notice out of those 23, I mean, most of them were telling me to sort of where to go, but there was quite a bit of concern in those first 23 about this appeal fee. So I was pleased to see that people were picking up on it, but I haven't read the last 25 and don't really want to.
Well, there are a few. Here's an Aptosian who's number 22. The bigger issue here is the loss of free speech. By the way, those who want to, just go to the Sentinel website and go to the story, Santa Cruz Fee Stops Tree Cutting Protests, which is on the main website, and then click on 57 comments, of which there are apparently 57. If you believe in democracy, it might not be wise to call someone a nut who is using due process, putting a $500 on appealing any decision, definitely narrows the participation of many citizens. Some people recognize this, and some people recognize there's a lot of hate-mongering going on in the Sentinel pages, which is nothing new.
Right.
The question is, what can we do about this? What do you do when the political process becomes so obstructed and corrupted? I mean, you were in the news. Or you aren't anymore. You can't find the story in the Sentinel website anymore. But you put out an editorial a week ago concerned with inadequate investigations of rape in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course,
this was prior to this most recent rape.
Right.
And I'm glad to see it seems to be, you know, being well investigated.
Well, one rape is, but there are probably a dozen others that aren't, is my suspition.
Yes,
what's
that would be mine
it?
Too, especially when it's non-stranger, because they bring up all people's prejudices and biases about, you know, she put herself in a dangerous situation, you know, she was drinking, so yeah, I'm not so sure how.
But whatever the misogynist biases, and then they're all over the state. You pointed out, and you've brought forward figures that seem to demonstrate a real problem that elsewhere in the state there are 40% of the cases at least result in some kind of an arrest.
An arrest and a charge.
Here in Santa Cruz, 13%.
That's right.
Result in an arrest and charge. Now, I guess one could look more closely into those stats and say, well, Santa Cruz is very concerned about the civil liberties of suspects, and therefore we don't, you know, grab the first African-American person we see walking down the street as they do in San Francisco or whatever. And that might be a claim to say, you know, Santa Cruz is more enlightened and so it arrests less people.
Spare me.
You know, I'm trying to take the devil's point of view.
Yeah, I know.
But,
yeah.
But you know, I haven't seen any investigation to even claim that kind of a response. So,
no, it's disturbing on many levels, the fact that, you know, you sort of hope if you put out something startling, people will, like, you know, hurriedly get organized. So I guess everyone's too busy or too checked out, or most people are bystanders. But, the lack of reaction and the burying it and the lack of response is, well, I think I did get yelled at by Agnone.
Kathy Agnone, the staff member of the commission.
Yes, who didn't really address any of the substantive issues.
She's a woman who is the hired staff person, sort of the city manager's underling on this issue, who got her own piece in the Sentinel the week after you did your editorial, which has now disappeared from the Sentinel website.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Although the comments have not disappeared, for those who want to see a lot of interesting racist hate mongering, they can jump on board, and as well as some interesting discussions.
Well, I was having a conversation with somebody about the fee increase, and he thought it might be illegal and maybe look into it. But I checked with the Coastal Commission. Now, they may not be the best source, but when I was trying to get them involved in saving this tree, and they really could have stepped in and saved it, but they chose not to. Mostly because of the property owners wouldn't allow them on the property. But I asked them about this, when I realized or heard it's going to cost me $500, I said, well, is this okay? And they said, well, some cities charge money and some don't. So it seems like it's discretionary and it doesn't seem like it's illegal, but it might be worth looking into, but also making it a campaign issue for the next election, because I think, is it 3 seats that are up?
Not sure, but there's certainly going to be 3 or 4 seats are going to be up in November. Also, I mean, as far as trees go, all the trees in parking lot number 4 are going to be torn down if the downtown commission pursues what it was originally on its agenda today. I didn't get the update from 8:30 to 10:30, but they're planning on building a parking structure in back of Taqueria Vallarta at Cathcart and Cedar Streets.
Yes, and I'm just, I know the Taqueria Vallarta. Oh, you mean
next
where
the
university,
market.
Where the university in, not
correct.
University in the university-owned building is.
Right, Taqueria Vallarta.
They're
going to
build
on
one on that open parking.
That's my understanding. I may be wrong about that. Mm. Somebody should call me in and correct me if I'm mistaken. But that's my understanding, and it was on the agenda. I also, of course, wanted to talk yesterday on the agenda about the plan to put a new police substation into the Soquel parking garage and spend another $110,000 on top of $400,000 already appropriated to provide merchant commercial space in there. Which, I'm not saying it's necessarily wrong, but suddenly $110,000 cost overrun, that's a one-fifth cost overrun suddenly. Rotkin, Coonerty, the entire council would not allow me to talk about that.
Really?
I requested a time to speak, and they wouldn't give it to me, other than the 2 minutes where I was allowed to request the time to speak. I suppose I could have tried to ram into the 2 minutes, what I wanted to say, but I also had to talk about the other issue, which had to do, as people who were listening to the show will find out, is the issue of the parking lots out on near Lighthouse Field and the re-striping and the signage that has now been changed by the state Parks and Rec because the city illegally banned RVs from those parking lots.
No, I haven't been following that issue, Robert. I do have to go. Is there anything half a minute? Is there anything else that you'd like me to comment on, or any questions?
Well, I'd like you to do is take that rape article that you wrote and post it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz.
Oh, all right.
It won't disappear there so quickly. If you can update it slightly so they don't kind of merge it into the mainstream media section. In other words, add your subsequent commentary based on reading the comments on the Sentinel forum, maybe if you can stomach any of them. Anything you've learned, any additional questions, legitimate questions you want to answer, and maybe expand it a little and put it up on the Indie Bay website so people can have access to it because they don't have access to it now.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. And I did, I remember, I haven't forgotten that I said I would send you Councilmember Rockin and I concluded and the whole joint committee did about what was lacking in the investigations.
Right, the 5 recommendations.
Yeah,
the
there were more
department.
Than yeah. So I haven't forgotten. I've just been otherwise engaged and then having a bit of a break. But I will definitely get that to you, and I'll also post that on the site.
That's great. Okay. That way, you can give people something to actually agitate about, other than saying, "Well, there's a strange disparity in the arrest rate." And you can say, "Well, it may be because they have these procedures and we don't." And that may be something the police department can either address or, as they've been doing, ignore. Or
yes, and these
doing.
Were more like not so much procedures. What it is, it's a detailed of what is lacking in the investigation, which is just another way of looking at it. This should be done, but this is lacking, so it's just the other side of the same coin.
Sure.
So I will get that to you, and thanks once again, Robert, for the opportunity to say a few words.
Well, thanks for standing up at the city council meeting and standing up over the years. I mean, we may have been on I think we've been on different sides of this, of some issues in the past, because environmentalists and homeless activists sometimes disagree. But, you know, you raise issues that are very important, particularly in terms of public process, and I thank you for coming on the air.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Julie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the phone line to call. If you'd like to get in touch, you might have been able to call that line a moment ago because Jillian Greensite was on it. She is the co-founder and a former member of the city's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, whom Michael Rotkin refused to reappoint. I tend to suspect that might have been because she was raising embarrassing questions about what the city council wasn't doing around holding the police department accountable for its failure to adequately investigate rapes in Santa Cruz. Again, you know, it's an important issue. It needs to be addressed publicly and discussed, not muzzled, not swept under the rug, not, you know, only coming to the fore when there's a particularly horrendous or, you know, sentinelly headlined rape, as happened last week. And hopefully, if you want to hear more, read more about Jillian Greensite and the issue of rape, you can go to some of the past free radio shows she's spoken on, which are archived. The best way to get to them is through the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media. That's www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, all small letters, all one word. And then you use the find function for Jillian, G-I-L-L-I-A-N, Greensite, G-R-E-E-N-S-I-T-E, Jillian Greensite. Currently, she also works up at UCSC counseling rape victims up there and has a paid position doing that. So she's not a novice to this whole situation. Well, welcome again, for those of you tuned in late, to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to do a little musical break with a little more of the inessential Uncle Banzai. Actually, I think it's kind of essential. It's got some great stuff on here. I used to play Uncle Banzai a decade ago, and I used to enjoy it 2 decades ago, but I'm now going to give you an opportunity to do that. This is a group that composed some tuneful and humorous and touching songs in the 80s, and they're going to get a chance to play a few of them. Or I'm going to play them, and you get a chance to hear them now.
This song is about cheerleaders. I grew up in a little town in Indiana, not too far from here, about 30 miles, and I was a cheerleader in 7th grade. And then in 8th grade, I didn't make it. And I was very sad about it, and I had to get over it. So my way of getting over it was to keep those cheers alive in my memory. And so one of my favorite cheers is contained in this next song. This song is about the kind of cheerleaders we must have been back then. It's called Cheerleaders on Drugs.
How do they jump so high?
How do they
and spread their legs so wide?
And where the skirts that they wear?
How do they mount each one?
To make it fear of it.
If the drugs they're on.
Endless.
They wear their dark sunglasses.
They play the games at night.
The players make their passes.
They drop their pom-poms just to
run. The mascot sneaks inside.
He's probably overspread. The game's not over yet. It's time to go to bed. It seems like they must be on drugs or just stupid. They're buoyant and fussy and just plain dumb. It seems like they're brainwashed or on anesthesia. Their brain suffers weight loss. Cause how else could they cheer like go? Go, you engines, chigawa, chigawa. Go, you engines, go, you engines, chigawa. Engines got the power. Go, G-O, go.
It stunts their mental growth.
It makes it hard to find
a future livelihood.
What others are their kind.
The marching band, it seems.
The boyers in the stands. The rest and both the teams are all the raving fans. Cheerleaders on drugs. Cheerleaders on drugs. Cheerleaders on drugs. It seems like I must be on drugs to solve it. They're playing dumb. The drug interaction could just be some teamwork. Their voices and factions make them sound.
cheerleaders on drugs.
And that was the Inessential Uncle Banzai's Cheerleaders on Drugs. That song's words and music by Andrew Ratchin, who I actually talked to while I ordered this this CD. I'm going to get a couple more, too, from him. And he still sounds just like he did 20 years ago. Amazing. So, again, call-in number here, 831-427-3772. We talk about civil rights locally, local politics on this show. We go till 8 o'clock. I come back on Sunday with a longer show, 9:30 to 1 o'clock. And a week from today, I'm going to have a special guest on. I invite you to join me with Robert Letterman. Robert is the head of ARTIST, A-R-T-I-S-T, which is a New York City organization concerned with the New York City business organizations' seizure of public space from street artists, performers, musicians, and homeless people, for that matter, people who the public, people who use the streets and who are trying to continue to make use of it in spite of the attempt of commercial interests to seize what's there and use it for profit. That'll be at 6 o'clock in early April, the first Thursday show in April. Check it out. Robert Letterman, he's quite an activist. He was arrested repeatedly in the late 90s when he would draw, he would have art showing Mayor Giuliani as Hitler, and Giuliani didn't like this at all and had him repeatedly arrested, but no convictions, just lots of arrests. I'm looking on the Counterpunch website. I often read articles from Counterpunch, but I always give customers, listeners, would that you were customers, a priority. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Christine Shana speaking with Children Helping Poor and Homeless People.
Hey, Christine. Glad you're calling in. See if I could turn up the sound a little so I can hear you a little better. Say something.
It's great to talk with you. Thank you for the invitation to call in.
Hey, thanks for calling in. I know we had a brief conversation with you on Sunday, and we talked more with Ron Taylor, who is also been working with you for I don't know how many decades on this issue. You're calling from Southern California, right outside Los Angeles?
That's correct, Riverside County.
And you were, at that time, last time we spoke, we were concerned about the situation in Ontario, California, not Ontario, Canada, as you might think, which is a town which has a tent city that's been there since July, more kind of a RV city, but I guess a combination of RVs and tents, which had held 400 people who, as a consequence of the foreclosure crisis and other things, don't have any houses left. We don't know. You say about 30 or 40% of them are there because they've lost their homes because of the subprime mortgage scandal?
At least, yes.
And so these aren't, you know, your hardcore homeless or the people that you might see on the streets of Santa Cruz, though actually, who knows, maybe some of them here have lost their homes. I know some people have lost their homes here. I don't know if I've seen them on the streets. But these are people who, there's often a lot more sympathy for such folks. We had this same phenomenon in Santa Cruz after the earthquake in 1989 because they're recently homeless. So mm-hmm. you can feel more comradeship with them because they're not, you know, dirty and, you know, in disabled, and there's a kind of a whole series of stereotypes that go with people who are long-term homeless or who don't fit into a particular category of recently disasterized homeless people.
You're right.
So you've been monitoring the situation, going out to the Camp Hope, as they call themselves, or Camp Hopeless, as Ron called them, and you want to give us the update on what's going on out there.
Well, I think your characterization of the place and the people there is correct. In July, the city opened up this six-block, two-and-a-half-acre area, very desolate area, to people to go who had no place else to go. And so they started out with about 17 to 25 people. From that time to about 2 weeks ago, the number grew to 400 to 500 people, including children and families and animals, and it was a city. And they called it Tent City. I don't know who calls it Camp Hope. I don't know who affixed that number. The city calls it a homeless assistance area. So it's quite different description of the place.
And again, how big is it?
It's 2.5 acres, around six blocks, I would say. But it's 2.5 acres of desolate land, very dry, some trees, but on the periphery of it.
And there's a lot of tents, but mostly RVs, or?
There were, I guess about around 100 tents, maybe more. And there were, I'm just trying to visualize in my mind, there were a lot of RVs on the different streets around this area.
And I know I heard, the first thing I heard after hearing about this in the Homelessness Marathon in February, which they actually were on in the segment right before the Santa Cruz segment, they had reports from a few cities in California, was that about a month later, or, well, not quite a month later, a couple weeks later, the city announced that disabled vehicles would not be allowed to be there. That was kind of their first step in beginning their homeless cleansing, right?
It was the first step. And Ron and I, we're married, by the way, and we co-direct Children Helping Poor and Homeless People. When we heard that the city was coming in to examine the vehicles and to have the police enforce the DMV regulations about tags and registration and all the DMV regs that you would expect of a mobile vehicle, we anticipated this was the first step. Because really what the vehicles were doing was providing more shelter than the tents. The vehicles, even though they might not be running or their tags were expired, were more stable, were more solid, withstood rain and high winds that the people had gone through. There were several instances during those months where tents were tattered by the wind and the rain. And, of course, the people in them were left to their own devices. But the people in these RVs, mobile whatever, or previously mobile vehicles, were more protected, except the ones that leak, and there were many that leaked, but at least they could put something over the top and did whatever they could.
What kind of toilet facilities were available out there?
At first, there were two toilets and one shower. I never did see the shower, but they told me it was somewhere. I just never could find it. But there were two. As of Monday, a week ago Monday, there were 12, two banks of six.
You know, that puts you 12 toilets ahead of Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
We have actually the parking lot, which yesterday, the farmer's market, has a porta potty they open up only during the farmer's market. It used to be a 24-hour porta potty.
Oh.
In fact, they used to have five of them throughout the city, mm-hmm. which were supposed to be in anticipation of actually putting in restrooms. For not just for homeless people, but for the for members of the community.
Sure.
And instead, of course, that is all gone by the wayside. Instead, they're spending extra money for a police substation. They spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on improving a bathroom, which was already open out in a tourist area called the Lighthouse Field area. So you have the usual misappropriation of funds and the demeaning of the situation. But in Ontario, California, this homeless assistance area, or tent city, as you call it, was kind of, as you pointed out, a unique area, although I guess there was at one time a Dome Village in Los Angeles, and there was a camp in Isla Vista, and we had our own Camp Paradise here in Santa Cruz, as they called it, along the San Lorenzo River for a while. But it was the only place in California. Well, it's not entirely true. New Jack City in Fresno is a tent city that's under the freeway. At Fresno, city authorities have actually given two porta potties to. And they did that, of course, because of the Kincaid and Jones decisions. The Kincaid decision saying you can't seize homeless property without holding it. The Jones decision, as you're familiar in Los Angeles, saying you can't arrest homeless people at night unless you have a shelter. And I suspect that's one of the reasons that the Ontario mayor suddenly got religion, although I guess he was a preacher beforehand, right?
I hope so, if I can say that. I know Ron really was responsible for getting the porta potties 24 hours in Santa Monica years ago. And then they were there for about a year. And he was primarily responsible for that. But then they were taken away.
Yeah, I know that it's taken.
Closed,
it takes incredible amounts of energy. I know, for example, Larry Milligan in San Diego had to do, he did a long hunger strike to open up a 24-hour bathroom in San Diego, which was open when we were there in the 90s. They actually had it monitored. They had a guard at the gate of this. It wasn't a porta potty. It was a real structure downtown. But it was done in consequence to, you know, all the unfavorable publicity that Larry Milligan brought on the city of San Diego, and they didn't do anything. And, of course, San Diego is now one of the cities that has decriminalized sleeping at night for homeless people on the city streets because of the Jones decision. That, of course, is, I presume that's not the case in Ontario. Do you actually have homeless people who are not in the tent city who are arrested for sleeping, or do they give them free rides out to the, or did they give them free rides out to tent city? What was the story?
Well, people could, the city of Ontario claims that there are 140 homeless people in the city of Ontario. And these are the people that the city of Ontario wants to help, which is very good of them. They should help, cities should help their populations, whatever their situation.
How large is the city of Ontario?
You know, I don't know by offhand. I should know that. I don't know.
All right, I want full research next time. I'll look it up, actually, if I can. Maybe I can do it while we're on, while we're
that
talking.
That would be great. But what happened was that the city invited people to go to this location, and they started out, you know, 17 or 25 people. I have differing reports on who, how many people started here. And then people just gravitated there. There isn't any place that I know of like this area anywhere, and people would tell other people about it so they could go there. Now, because of the crackdown 2 weeks ago, the children have all been asked to leave. Their families have been giving vouchers for a week. So there are no children there anymore. Most of the trailers have gone away. Either they've been towed or the people have left. And
when were you last out there?
Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday. And in the process of putting a fence around, well, they're grading a middle area of this 2.5 acres. They're going to put a fence around the graded area, and they're going to have the people who can prove that they lived in Ontario prior to July able to go back into that fenced area. There will be a 24-hour police presence, that's my understanding, that's what I've been told, in that fenced area, and there'll be a curfew at night.
And currently, though, there is no curfew, no fence, and no police?
We've been there for several months now, and the police drive by all the time that we've been there. I mean, it seems like that area is on some kind of a route for them. They've passed us numerous times as we've helped people. No one seems worried about them or anything. It seemed to worry about them. When we were last out there, we saw detectives, ununiformed people with badges, walking around in twos, and police in regular police uniforms all over the place. And the environment for people has changed. A number of the people there are just very unhappy now.
Well, I've just looked up on Wikipedia, Ontario, California.
Yes.
Ontario is a city located in San Bernardino County. It had a population in 2000 of 170,373.
Sounds right.
It's the home of the L.A. Ontario International Airport and the huge Ontario Mills Shopping Mall, the largest in Southern California and one of the largest in North America. Also, the former home of the Ontario Motor Speedway takes its name from the Ontario Model Colony, established in 1862 by Canadian engineers and so forth.
It's all good to know.
So, but it's 170,000. To claim that they have 140 homeless people sounds to me highly unlikely, frankly.
Well, with this area of Ontario, Riverside, San Bernardino Riverside area is really ground zero for the foreclosure disaster. So if that is the case, then I would imagine that if there are or were 140 people, that there'll be many, many more.
How far away is your... You normally operate in Santa Monica / Ventura. Where's your usual area that children helping poor and homeless people operate?
Our home base is really Venice.
Is Venice, which is...
And then we work with... we're an educational outreach program conducted by children and teens with adult advisors, and we have programs and people that we help in 5 states. And then there are different chapters of... children helping poor and homeless people all over the place. Students who've worked with us then go back to their schools and get involved.
Was there a chapter in Ontario before this tent city was set up?
No, we haven't. I don't think we'd helped anybody directly in Ontario. The cities around it, Fontana and others, but we hadn't really been in Ontario.
So you hadn't really, have you ever been into Ontario downtown to assess the homeless situation down there?
Well, I think it's pretty much like every place else. We have driven around the city and looked. This area that they put Tent City in is west of the airport. You can see planes landing, and so it's very, it's removed from downtown.
It's wretched, loud, and noisy?
I would imagine so, and it's right next to the railroad. Now, I haven't seen a train go by. I don't know their schedule, but it's, you got planes overhead and railroad tracks right there, so it's, it could be pretty busy, depending on the railroad schedule.
Well, I know they located the old back 40 here in Santa Cruz, which was kind of an open-air shelter called the Coral Street Open-Air Shelter, which is now occupied by Page Smith Community House on top of sort of a toxic dump area. And it's in Portland, another actual tent city, actually, it's a homeless-run encampment, which is called Dignity Village. You probably heard of it.
I have, yes.
You know, it was put on a miserable piece of property out near the airport, too, although they made quite a go of it. And I think up in Seattle, Tent City 4, as they call it, which is another outdoor, somewhat homeless-run, somewhat social service provider-run encampment, which moves about from place to place.
Mm.
I'm not sure where they're located. But it's, you know, to me, here in Santa Cruz, for example, even as we speak, the downtown, the planning department is considering some, I don't know, 5 or 10 or 20 year general plan about what can be done with the land in the Santa Cruz area. And one of the concerns that some of us have is that some of it be made available for, essentially emergency housing for poor and homeless people. I mean, we want, you know, decent low income housing, we want decent jobs, but until then there should be campgrounds where people who don't have a place to go can stay.
Yeah.
That's our view, and at least that's my view and the view of people that I know. And you got to get this apparently written into the general plan. So here's a kind of a shout out to those who are listening to this show and haven't got anything to do. Just skip on down to the city council where they're having a planning commission meeting talking about the general plan. That's down at 809 Center Street. We're talking with Christine who?
Seamus.
Did I get that right?
Seamus. S-C-H-A-N-E-S.
Seamus, thank you, Christine, and she's calling from the Ontario area, or actually from the Venice area, I guess.
I'm out here in Riverside right now.
You are in
Riverside County,
which is close, which is where the Ontario
about 30 miles from Tent City.
And what? We talked with Ron about the lack of organization in Tent City as far as resistance goes. I mean, when I talked to Kalamazoo, Michigan, I talked to activists there. Lisa Ann Tennyson, I believe that's her name. I hope I don't get it wrong, but they were doing protests in front of City Hall demanding basic rights for homeless people. And in numerous cities, there are organizations that some of them taken over by what we call poverty pimps, others that are really grassroots homeless people who are saying, you know, don't tread on us.
Mm.
What's happening out at Tent City? We heard from Ron, it didn't look too good. People are kind of, they keep to themselves. They're demoralized or depressed. They got cops everywhere that aren't being very helpful. They aren't there to protect them. They're there to move them out. What's cooking in terms of the potential solidarity situation?
Well, I think that's a pretty accurate situation where I would say it's a moment of flux right now. When the city, the first step, as you mentioned, was the enforcement of these DMV codes against these trailers, mobile homes, whatever they had that were on the street. They had sat there, some of them, for months, but all of a sudden these laws were enforced. So after that was really step one, and then this grading of the area in anticipation of a fenced-in area. So people right now are, in my opinion, kind of in shock. Their friends have had to leave. They've had to come up with identification. And these are homeless people. Otherwise, they wouldn't be out there. So for them to have identification that they lived in the city of Ontario at some point, some of them had driver's license indicating a Ontario address, which made it easier for them. But it's very disconcerting. So they're in a moment of personal, emotional upheaval. It's not a nice feeling right now. The city plans to go from this place, hopes to have its own building for these 140 people, with room for 170 eventually. But this is not even under construction right now. It's just a hope, pretty much in the vein of what you've just explained, you know, go from an outdoor area to an indoor area. But the planned building or facility is for a maximum of 170 people.
Do we know if the Ontario police are arresting homeless people for sleeping outside elsewhere in the city of Ontario?
We don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I know that people were arrested at 10th City if they had warrants. Their cars were towed if they weren't able to be operated, if they couldn't be turned on, and if they were ticketed and whatever else for not having the tags up to date.
And go ahead.
But this whole area of 10th City was, the purpose of it, was to get people from under bridges and wherever else they were sleeping out of the city into this area. So,
and why was that? I mean, frankly, I'm really skeptical about humanitarian motives here. I mean, I'd like to believe it, but usually it has to do with redeveloping a different area or, you know, neighbor complaints or the pitiless glare of publicity somehow. What was the reason for this sudden softening of the heart, if that's what it was, of the city officials of Ontario last July?
Well, I don't know if it was softening of the heart. I'm just repeating really what I was told by Brent Schultz, who is the housing person for the city of Ontario. He said that they opened this area for the people of Ontario who are homeless so that they wouldn't be sleeping under bridges or wherever they were sleeping and would not be defecating and urinating in public.
Uh-huh. I mean, had there been a big scandal, we don't know if there'd been a big scandal about this, or some, maybe the cops had shot some homeless person inadvertently, or I guess, you know, you said
not
you don't
know.
Yeah, who knows what the deal is?
Not that I know of.
You know, it just, well, it's. I mean, you also mentioned that they're instead of tattoos, we've got armbands that are wristbands that people are being asked to wear of different colors. You want to explain that out of the Tent City?
Well, in this step two, if you'll call the DMV enforcement step one, step two was to identify the people by bands that are basically hospital bands. They look like hospital bands, permanent on your arm. Blue meant you had provided proof of residency in the city of Ontario prior to July 2006. And then orange meant you had provided some information, but not enough, and you had a period of time, usually a week, to come up with some more. And white, if you were issued a white band, you were told that you had to leave within a week.
Now, you said July 2006. Do you mean July 2007?
Seven, pardon me.
Okay.
Yes, you're correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now,
and
when did the bands go on people's arms?
They went on their wrists. And each armband, each wristband was numbered. So not only did people get a color and a band that had to stay on them, they were numbered.
And what's the penalty for not having a your band on? Do you get banned if you don't have your band?
Well, that's a really good question. People were told to keep them on, and some of the people did. Some of the people did not. I went over and I was talking to people that day when they got, Ron and I were there, when they got the bands. And we took pictures of very unhappy people and then people without bands, and spoke to one man named Scott, who said he was not going to wear his. He would not do it. But since that time, it's been, I guess, a little over a week, IDs were issued to everyone. So now everyone has an ID, and they don't have to wear the band at this time.
Now, of course, in California, you don't have to show your ID, even if you're asked for it by the police, unless there's reasonable suspicion you're committing a crime.
Yes.
So, you know, it'd be nice to have some lawyer or just, you know, ordinary person inform the people at the 10th City mm-hmm. that, you know, when the cop comes up and asks for your ID, the best thing to do might be to say, what crime do you suspect me of? Well, we're just investigating. Well, I don't want to go. I left my ID in my, you know, in my trailer. Sorry.
Well, that's a good strategy, Robert. The only thing is that practically speaking, it's really tough to do that.
I know. You got to train yourself to do it.
But it's very dangerous also. You know, in my opinion, I mean, here you are with nothing. And I would say that in order to do that successfully, it'd be really good to have a number of people there around you when
right.
you did that.
And a camera.
And a camera, I was just going to say.
Right, or a tape recorder.
Yes.
You know,
it's very dangerous.
If you can, do you have any phone number? You must have phone numbers of people out there at 10th City. People with cell phones?
Well, I don't have any cell phones. I've given them our 800 number.
But do they have, I mean, there must be some people out there who have cell phones, right?
Yes, there are.
Maybe what you can do when you next go out there is find out a few of those people, get their cell phone numbers, you know, just to stay in touch with them, but also tell them that we would like to talk to them in Santa Cruz if they want to call us and be on the air directly.
Sure, I'll do that.
You know, and I know sometimes you get the more wing-nutty population, if you forgive me for putting it that way, and sometimes not. But, I mean, these are people who are under siege, it sounds like.
They are. It's a very difficult situation right now. You could say, you could look at it in two different ways. One is that 140 people, maybe 170, will have a place to stay. But you could also say it's fenced and there's certain real restrictions that could make it very uncomfortable. And then the other is, where do the other people go? What if they can't provide ID and they are Ontario residents? It just says to me, we've got to have a better solution. Everybody's got to be working on this, not just one city.
What's the reaction of the local media to this?
We've had a lot of coverage in the LA Times, and the Press Enterprise has had coverage in it also.
And what kind of coverage, meaning
ain't
it a shame? Or?
Pardon?
What kind of coverage?
Big pictures and interviews, and they had some happy pictures and some sad pictures. I don't know that it's done anything except spread the word. I know our organization has been sharing it with all the schools. We work with school districts and over 200 students from over 200 schools, and we've put out the word to get the LA Times and see these things, and they're being brought up in classes so the students can find out what's happening.
I'm a little reluctant to ask this, but state legislators or congressional representatives or are any city officials being urged to do things like, I don't know, declare a moratorium on foreclosures in the area, as can be done by the governor under emergency legislation, instead of simply, throwing more money at the banks to back up bad investments? Is there any picketing or demonstrating being done against these foreclosures? Are people getting together to do anything about this?
Not that I know of right now. Barack Obama's speech today, this morning at Wall Street, was the most that I've heard. And he has some definite thoughts about foreclosures and basically saying to people, we got to cut out the greed, which is really the source of the problem, in my opinion. I think it's Ron's also. People just making money from the backs of other people.
It would be nice to have a little senatorial bill from somebody like Obama or other politicians who are, shoveling rhetoric at us by the shitload, if you'll forgive me for putting it that way, instead of a lot of, I'm running for office, vote for me stuff. Mm-hmm. While they are in power, Clinton and Obama are both in power. They can act in the Senate to introduce bills. Now, maybe they have. I haven't heard of that yet.
I understand that Obama is backing something by Chris Dodd. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten a copy of it yet or anything.
That's possible.
One thing I could, if I may say, that's been pointed out to me as a possible suggestion for people facing foreclosure, and that is rent an apartment before your home goes into foreclosure. And that will assure residency of some kind. After a property goes through foreclosure or a person goes through foreclosure, their credit really gets a big hit.
And so you can get a free room in the latest hovel the city is building for the fraction of the homeless people that it wants to cover in its... We won't let the rest of those folks in. We're driving them all away. But here's the building for our local homeless.
Well, I have to say, at least it's something. It's not the most pleasant situation, but these people had less than that before. So if it's a home for some, that's good. It's not the answer. A home is the answer.
Well, it sounds like they had more than that before in terms of 400 people had gotten at least together to park their vehicles and set up tents.
Yes.
And now they're being driven away.
Well, that's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Those people are, many of them are gone now. So friends, and the next thing that was happening, and I haven't been out there, was that the dogs were going to be taken away, and we're going to have to see
the dogs.
If that happened. Yes, the people that were living in Tent City after the different color armbands. We're doing steps here: DMV, then the bands, then the ID, the leveling of the property, the putting up the fence, and the next thing is the dogs. And people have said that they will fight for their dogs. So, and some people have said they'll leave if their dogs are threatened to be taken away. So I don't know what's happened to the dogs lately, but that's the next thing that we have to find out about.
We're talking with Christine of Children Helping Poor and Homeless People. For those who want to call in and have a question for her, I don't know how much time you got left here, Christine, but here's a quick number, 427-3772, and we can actually bring people in on a second line. If anybody wants to call in, 427-3772 is the number to call. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Christine, who's going to spell her last name for me again.
Shanes, S-C-H-A-N-E-S. Christine is fine with Children Helping Poor and Homeless People. It's great.
S-C-H-E?
S-C-H-A-N-E-S.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Shanes. So it looks like our phone lines are not lighting up immediately, but perhaps they will in the moment or two before you. How much time you got left?
I have some time, sure.
Okay, well, I don't have a lot of information about Ontario. You've worked a lot in Venice, which I know is also being subject to a, not only a de-homelessification program, but also a program to drive away artists and other people who live in vehicles, right?
Yes.
So this
one of the things that's easiest for a city to do is to put up no parking areas and permitting areas. Very, very easy. And the residents don't seem to mind paying $7 or $14 twice a year for the privilege of parking on their own public streets, which I don't understand. That's very sad for me. But what the city of Santa Monica has done is, for much of the city, is limit the parking on most of the streets to the residents on that street who have to go to the city hall and buy a parking permit for their own vehicle, which they do twice a year. They renew it. And then they can park on their own street for this tax, basically, of parking on their own street. But it eliminates those people who do not have that sticker or a guest sticker. They can also get two guest stickers.
We are hauntingly familiar with that particular procedure. It's being used here extensively. And not just, it's an anti-homeless measure. And the reason it's so, some of it is, to give people who live in their houses a chance to avoid massive tourists or student use of the areas in front of their house. But there's also provisions that make it illegal, for example, for anybody to park between the hours of, midnight and 6 or thereabouts without a permit. And during those hours, of course, tourists and students aren't around.
Yes.
And so it's clearly designed to harass people whose only shelter and whose only home is their vehicle.
Yes, absolutely.
And that, of course, is what we are trying to challenge here in Santa Cruz with our attack on the sleeping ban law, as was successfully challenged in San Diego, Los Angeles, Fresno, and is now being challenged in Sacramento, and was ruled, they changed the law in Richmond because of the Jones decision. Have you considered, have any lawyers come forward in Ontario suggesting that people in tent city actually have, dare I say it, civil liberties that are being violated here?
Well, the ACLU was there at the time we were there the other day, but their statement that's been out in the press has been that they're monitoring the situation.
Uh-huh.
I would love to have seen them file a temporary restraining order against the banding of people with numbers, but that didn't happen.
Requiring people to leave. Do we know, on Sunday when you were out there, we really had a chance to talk with you only very briefly. Yes. Did you talk to anybody who had a white armband or who you knew had gotten a white armband or was told to leave, who was going to say, who was not going to leave, or was everybody going to line up like dutiful lemmings and stream out to the next place to jump off the cliff?
Well, people are afraid of arrest.
Of course.
So when the people I did speak to who had white armbands, there were one or two people that did not understand their color. They thought that they had permission to stay. So these people were going to be in trouble. But I don't think it's a city's intention to really arrest people as much as to have them leave.
They would prefer to have everybody get scared away disappear.
Yeah.
But are there people who are not going to do that, as far as you know?
Not really. There are some people there that do not have permission to be there. And they're trying for their life to stay there. I don't know how that'll turn out.
You plan to go out there again soon?
Oh, yeah.
When do you think you're going to be heading out that way?
The next few days.
Can you, if you can, if you can get a phone contact out there, I'd love to be able to talk to somebody more directly.
Surely.
And I really appreciate your coming on the air. Okay. We have been talking with Christine Shanus. Aha.
Great.
Of Children Helping Poor and Homeless People down in Venice, but actually you have chapters in different places as well, you've said. Is there anything more you'd like to say about this general situation, or is there anything people can do up here who are listening who might have access to a computer, might want to fire off a fiery email to somebody? Can they write a letter to the Times or the Press Enterprise?
Absolutely. The Times, Press Enterprise. I'd love to hear from them through our website, if I can give that number.
Sure.
We're at the three W's, chphp.com, and then chphp@earthlink.net is our email address. And we'd love to hear from people. 800-333-4349 is our direct line. And
is there more information on your website as to this particular issue and where, how people can, maybe the email address of the newspapers in question, so people can write letters expressing their outrage at what's going on?
Well, we have some pictures of the people at Tent City on our website, chphp.com.
If you can post an actual, like an address, the mayor's email or the email of the local newspapers, that would give people a way of kind of directly finding that information and being able to write some letters of concern.
That's a great idea. We'll have to update our website and put that information on there. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Christine. I'm sorry that we've actually been, I find myself proposing the same thing year after year, and I don't know what kind of good it does. But you know, I think if you're doing what you're doing anyway, there's no reason not to do that too. So.
Absolutely, and I thank you for providing all of the information and all of the interest that you have for the whole community. We really appreciate all the work that you're doing, Robert.
Hey, keep those reports coming. And again, www.chphp.com, 800-333-4549. That's 4349.
Yes.
Glad you caught me on that. It's 800-333-4349.
That's it.
And chphp.com.
Correct.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Robert. You take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, as they have been for the last hour. 427-3772 is the call-in number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org, in case you happen to be out of the area and wanting to listen into this. You can also reach me off-air at 423-4833, which is also known as the Huff Line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights organization concerned with restoring rights here in Santa Cruz. 423-HUFF, if you want to help out locally. And I don't necessarily mean by giving away blankets, but we'll find ways to put you to work monitoring misconduct and trying to fight back against it.
Thank you, guys. You know, I don't know what you're doing over there. But
we're literally official. Remember?
Oh, you're recording.
Remember that?
You mean you got all this for public radio? Would you like to introduce this song?
We have one more children's song for you. It's my opinion that a child is never too young to learn about Freud.
Absolutely. That's right. Okay, so this is a song about what Ashley and I would do if one day we were so lucky as to be endowed with a penis of our own.
One each,
that's right. Because, you know, I'll share the motorhome with you, but, you know.
Really?
I'll only go so far.
Well, one of you sits in the upper, one of you sits in the lower bunk, so it would have been a really ugly scene.
It would have been like Slinky. Sorry, that was one for public radio. Anyway, this is what we would do. We made a list of sort of things we thought would be fantastic to do with it, and that's what this song is.
Right. It's called, appropriately, Penis Envy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
If I had a penis, I'd wear it outside. In cafes and car lots, we'd pop in with pride. If I had a penis, I'd pamper it proper. I'd stay in the tub and use me as a stopper. If I had a penis, I'd take it to parties, stretch it and stroke it and shove it at Smarties. I'd take it to pet shows
teach it to stay. I step it in turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. I rival my bodies in sports cars and stick shifts. I shower my fire with girlies and gifts. I peek around corners, I aim at my toilet. I poke it at borders, I soap it and oil it. If I had a penis, I'd run to my mother, comb up the hair and compare it to brother. I'd lance her, I'd knight her, my hands would indulge. Pants would seem tighter and buckle and bulge. A penis to plunder, a penis to push. There's one in the hat, is there one in the bush? A penis to love me, a penis to share. To pick up and play with when nobody's there. I sit like a guy, I straddle a chair. I play with my fly, albeit with care. I dip it in chocolate, I stick it in sockets. I stroll to the movies with hands deep in pockets. I stick it in vacuums, I'm making verandas. Gaskos and baubles and poodles and pandas and puddles and drapers and talkers and bitches. Pullers and bottles and bottles and bitches. Zucchinis and zebras, tomatoes and tomatoes and pumpkins and pumpkins and cultures and crackers and melons and marshmallows. Gloves and gorillas. Slurpees and slippers. Chinooks and chinchillas. A penis to plunder, a penis to push. There's one in the hat, it's with one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share. To pick up and play with when nobody's there. If I had a penis, I'd climb every mountain. I'd force it on females. I'd pee like a fountain. If I had a penis, I'd still be a girl. But I make much more money and conquer the world.
Enjoy your evening.
Okay. 15-1 on the 19th of March. 5 years of murder in Iraq Day. Oh, the thrill of it all. Sure. I'm down here on the mall talking with, give me yourself a pseudonym.
Vincent.
And Vincent, you say that you got a marijuana ticket for a roach?
For a roach of marijuana.
Give me the details.
The police officer wrote me a ticket for it. And when I left, it was actually a misdemeanor, though. So I got charged with a misdemeanor possession of marijuana for a roach. It was like the end of a joint, like the size of a thumbtack.
When did you get this?
About a few days ago.
Where did you get it?
In front of buddies.
And what were the circumstances? What time of day was it?
It was in the evening. The police officer just walked. The three of them just walked up to me. They're the same ones that harass me all the time.
The names of the cops?
Sims and Bape and... I can't remember the third guy's name, the bicycle cop.
Hoppy?
Hoppy, that's what his name. I thought it was Bob, man. Hoppy.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's a white supremacist, actually, though. He told me that.
Really?
Yeah. Sims is a Nazi, actually. Yeah, a real one.
I'll have to look into his party membership and see if his dues have been paid up.
Those are verified information, actually.
I want more details.
But it's a misdemeanor charge for a roach of possession of marijuana. That's kind of
what did they say to you as they gave you the citation?
One of the cops actually said it was a narcotic, which I thought was kind of funny too. He's like, you've got these narcotics, and I was like, well, how could you be a police officer and not even know that marijuana isn't a narcotic? You know what I mean? First of all.
And were there anybody watching this incident?
There was a crowd of people around, and they were like, oh, it's obvious harassment and everything, because the same police officers keep harassing me.
Now, how had these officers approached you before?
Oh, just like on a daily basis, trying to find me and be like, oh, you're standing too near to a building or something. But like, not just randomly, but like regularly, you know, like following me around.
The last time before this marijuana incident that you recall a contact with the cops?
I got a ticket for riding my bicycle the wrong way on the street, that everyone rides their bicycle right down on the one-way street.
Pacific Avenue.
Right. And like the day before that, I got a ticket for walking my bicycle the wrong way on the sidewalk or something like that, you know.
you have all these citations?
No, I burn them after I get them. I light them on fire. That's my protest.
Off record, I know you want to be anonymous. You should give me your real name so we can check on these tickets in court.
No, I can't. My lawyer takes care of them. I don't know. It's,
you actually have a lawyer?
Yeah, I have a lawyer in L.A. that takes care of them all.
Well, the reason I would check on them would not be for your basis, but because if we can show a pattern of selective enforcement, it may not just be against you, but against other people, too.
Right.
And if, you know, if it's happening to you, you may be a good case to show selective enforcement.
Well, you know, I mean, Sims, actually, when I first met that, they told me that he made an anti-Semitic comment to me and told me to leave town, actually.
Are you Jewish?
I am, actually.
Get out of town, you dirty kite, you.
That's pretty much what he said. Yeah, that's the first time I met him in, like, December, he said that.
Right.
Well, they also asked me the other day. They asked me how much money I had when I got.
The Jews always have money.
I know. When I got the Roach misdemeanor, they asked me how much money I had. They asked me where I got my pizza from that I was eating. They asked me where I was going.
Did you answer these questions?
Vaguely, but they asked you a lot of weird questions, like where is I going, who was I going to talk to, where was I just going.
They ask you the meaning of life.
No, I don't think they would know the meaning of life.
You might, though.
I could. It's possible. Yeah.
Perhaps they're seeking deeper wisdom for you, and they're afraid to approach you in a direct way.
I'm sure they don't know what deeper wisdom is.
Yes, well, that could well be. Unfortunately, you know, you get into these uniforms, and you forget certain things and get obsessed with other things.
I thought that was a worthy protest just for the personal use of marijuana to get a misdemeanor for a roach.
Why don't you ask for a jury trial, because you have a right to a jury trial. See if a jury of 12 people will convict you for a roach.
Yeah, well, except there's such corruption, they could severely fuck a person over for something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, potentially. I mean, within the law, they could severely...
Well, they have to find you guilty with a jury first.
Yeah, I know, but they do that intentionally it's like a setup, basically. You know what I mean? It's like a setup.
I would encourage you to take it to a jury trial, and let me know if you do. I'm going to give you my card in the event that you...
We have to worry about that, because if if a person doesn't got money to, like, bail out or pay a lawyer or something like that, then they just put them in the system, and they get them, you know... I mean, potentially, a misdemeanor is up to a year in jail, right?
Correct.
So they're basically trying to put me in
jail. Some misdemeanor.
Right. I mean, the way I look at it, it's like they're trying to put me in jail for a year for smoking a roach, or for having a roach, which I wasn't even smoking at the time. I just had it.
Well, I would say they're probably trying to get a hold on you, put you on probation, which means you could be put under closer police observation, maybe ban you from the mall.
Exactly. It's like a kidnapping attempt or something, basically.
Well, that's why I think you need to go before a jury of your peers, of whom there are none.
That's why I just burn the ticket and completely forget all about it. I just ignore it completely, because I just think...
Burn joints, not tickets? I don't know what they mean.
Roll a joint up in a ticket and light it on fire.
Burn both together. We've been talking with...
Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent.
Excellent.
And it's about 7:15. I'm doing a little munching here in the studio. I think what I'm going to do now is fill you in on what happened during the brief period of time I was at the last Santa Cruz City Council meeting, which was 2 days ago. City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday. It has usually an afternoon session and an evening session, though Mayor Coonerty has been adopting the practice of shutting down evening sessions in favor of afternoon sessions, which has the double disadvantage to the public of A, being harder to go to, unless you're a retiree or unemployed or independently wealthy, because you may be working during the day, and also, since everything is crammed often onto the afternoon session, and this last time there was one item on the evening session, well, two if you count oral communications, the 20 minutes of oral communications that Coonerty allows, reduced from 30 minutes, and the 2 minutes per speaker reduced from 3 minutes. There was one other item, which was the tree appeal, which you heard about earlier, a little bit about that, and you can read about that in the Sentinel. Jillian Green site talked about how the city is now raising the cost to make an appeal 10 times what it was, from $50 now to $500. But I was there for another matter, and I was there. I'll discuss what that matter was and kind of do so in the context of this replay of the tape of the city council meeting. You're now going to hear Mayor Coonerty introducing oral communications, which is also, and this is one of the few, I think, positive things he did. I can give Mayor Coonerty credit for positive things. It wasn't terribly... a great step forward, but he allowed for some oral communications at the beginning of the afternoon session. 10 minutes worth, 2 minutes per person for five speakers. And this is what we got.
Well, just
And actually, what I need to do actually is rewind this so that we actually can see what we got. It's been playing while I've been napping, actually. So let's see if I can get it back to where it should be. Again, I want to remind you, in case you want to call in, the phone number here is 427-3772. Really having some trouble rewinding this sucker, but it is going back. The oral communications period has been made shorter, and it's also less time is allowed per speaker, which is a serious problem for people, both because there's less time on the regular agenda to talk if you want to address an issue to the community and to the city council, and also because it's really hard to put much together in 2 minutes. 3 minutes is a difficult time even, but 2 minutes is an even more brief amount of time in which to convey what may be not a simple thought. So that can be a problem. I think we're going to do a little musical break here while I try to set this up better. My apologies. I thought I was handling this a little better, but little did I know. Here's a little more Uncle Banzai for those who like Uncle Banzai, and I'm one of those.
I want a man who washes the dishes.
I want a man who'll make the bed.
I want a man who's not suspicious.
I want a man who's halfway dead.
I want a man who'll do the laundry.
Vacuum the carpet.
Sweep the floor. I want a man who knows his boundaries. No one can ask for more.
I want a woman who...
Oh, shut up. Sit down.
Yes, you're here, dear. Right away.
I want a man who follows orders. I want a man with nothing to say. I want a man with no ambition.
I want a man with half a brain.
I want a man without a mission.
I want a man who won't complain.
I want a man who carved the turkey.
Feed the goldfish.
Cook the meal. I want a man who's kind of jerky. I want a man who does not feel...
Just a minute, I'm coming. Just a moment, I'm on my way. Can I get a cup of tea? Just a moment, you'll need a tray.
I want a man with no desires.
I want a man without a goal.
I want a man who'll build the fires.
Stir the coffee,
stir the coals. I want a man who likes what I like, does what I do, won't say no. I want a man who'll always be here. I want a man who'll let me go.
Just stick it up, fix that toaster. Just a moment, I'll get that door. Just a moment, you'll need a coaster. Let me get it, your feet are sore. Just a minute, dear, I am coming. Just a moment, I'm on my way. Can I get you a cup of tea, dear? Just a moment, you'll need a tray. Just a minute, dear, wait a minute, darling. Just a moment, love, I'm on my way. Can I get a second, any love to start the day? Just a minute, wait a minute.
And that was, again, Uncle Banzai with I Want a Man. Okay, here's the City Council, Tuesday, March 25th, the afternoon session. Mayor Coonerty is introducing the first oral communications period. I'm going to be interrupting him with a few comments of my own.
Prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. I also want to note that we have rules of decorum for this meeting. There's a flyer in the back that outlines what those decorums, what the guidelines are. But we expect that we will adhere to a basic level of decorum and respect each other and what everyone has to say.
This is an interesting situation here because the rules of decorum were used to arrest me some years ago when I raised my hand in a silent, you're acting like a bunch of fascists salute, a very brief one. And the claim that the city council can to say that a meeting is being disrupted if decorum isn't being observed and thereby ban people from the meeting or remove them or silence them, even if there's no real disruption happening, but simply an expression of opinion that's a passing expression, is really a serious concern for people who want to be able to attend meetings and also want to see a democratic process at city council and not see a community repressed. Coonerty has kind of carried this further by saying to people that they cannot applaud or boo during the meeting. I think this is outrageous, and of course I'm going to ignore this personally. I think that's absurd. And to say that applause or boos constitutes disruption is ridiculous. Of course, what he's relying on is the fact that people are afraid that they will be excluded or they're afraid that they will be embarrassed by him. And this is part of just a general process of using a kind of a policification whether it's, getting you to stop traditional behavior like chatting with a friend in a parking lot, which has now become illegal, unless you have a vehicle and unless you're in the process of retrieving or picking up your vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes as a total time. You can't, if you're in your car for 16 minutes for any purpose, that's an infraction crime. And the idea is to get you, out of fear of possible consequences, to move along, or in the case of Coonerty at City Council, to shut your mouth, not to applaud, to sit with your hands in your lap, to obey like a good little citizen. Not good, in my mind. Not good at all.
If I give a warning, after three cumulative warnings have been issued, the person disrupting the meeting will be asked to leave and not return to the next council meeting. And there are warnings carrying from previous meetings. So, Mr. Tomasi.
Now, that is interesting, too. Cumulative warnings, according to the California First Amendment Coalition, which monitors legislative city councils throughout the state, are simply not relevant. I mean, if someone's disrupting a meeting, they're disrupting a meeting. If they're not disrupting a meeting, they're not disrupting a meeting. But to say that I'm going to warn you, you can't, let's say, cough, or you can't hold up a sign in the back, you have to show that what the person is doing is disruptive, not that he's been warned three times not to do something that, let's say, the mayor doesn't like. And the idea that this kind of carries over from meeting to meeting with something that Mayor Kennedy tried to do, but that was essentially, it seemed to be disavowed by subsequent mayors, Matthews, Rotkin, and Riley, but it's apparently back again with Coonerty.
The last meeting carries forward to this meeting. All right.
Sir.
You're welcome. So now we have 10 minutes of oral communications for the City Council and Redevelopment Agency. This is a time for people to speak to us on items that are not on our agenda. And if you speak this afternoon, you cannot speak tonight. If you spoke last week, we ask that you let others who didn't speak go before you. So do we have some people to speak for the afternoon?
Notice how it's phrased. We ask that you let others go before you. And, in fact, that's all they really can do, because each meeting is a new meeting. To claim that if you spoke before, you're not allowed to do that is, in fact, a kind of procedure that penalizes the most active people at meetings, because it requires them to go to the end of the line. As my understanding, again, from the California First Amendment Coalition and the conversations I've had with Terry Frank and Peter Scheer, who are the leaders there, or at least spokespeople there, is that every meeting is a new meeting. First come, first served on lines. You can't have special designations on public comment hearings and say, well, you spoke last time, we're not going to hear from you until we heard from everybody else this time. That means people who may be really particularly expert or particularly energetic or active will be assigned to the back. And that's a no-no, according to, as I understand it, Frank or Scheer. I'm not sure which one of them said that. Nonetheless, our city council does do that. And in so doing, my belief, violates the Brown Act, the Public Meetings Act, which guarantees you fair access to the city council and to the community at these meetings.
Good afternoon, Mayor Coonerty, council members. I'm Maggie Ivey with the Santa Cruz County Conference and Visitors Council. I came here today to talk in favor of the La Bahia Hotel Project in the beach area.
And I'm going to kind of turn down speakers that, frankly, I'm not terribly interested in. People who are flacks for the Seaside Company or front groups for the Seaside Company or the Chamber of Commerce, I'm not terribly interested in spending a lot of time talking about or analyzing them at this point on the show. My point here is to talk about how public process has been corrupted and public comment shrunk, and the ability to even state law violated, as there's a growing kind of cold conservative wind in the air in Santa Cruz.
Always talking about that economic engine for travel and tourism, this would be a very important addition.
So we're going to kind of roll through some of this stuff, and I'm going to try to focus instead on speakers who I think need to have to be heard. This woman, I'm sure, has a lot of opportunity to speak as a spokesperson for the Chamber of Commerce.
Off-season business, between what's happening with the potentially with the La Bahia, the remodel of the Dream Inn, more effective utilization of the 20,000 square feet of the Coconut Grove. This is a perfect formula.
And so really look at the beach area of this is what comes of not spending adequate time doing editing, but
for our community.
So nonetheless, I guess here in this situation, we should be happy that Coonerty has ruled only 2 minutes per speaker, because for this particular speaker, not too interested.
Any other speakers?
Marilyn Garrett. Commendations to Amanda Martinez for her superb article. Exposé in the Good Times, its most recent issue. Trash twice the size of the continental United States is collecting in the North Pacific, much of it plastic, and some terms struck a resonance of familiarity here. Petroleum-based synthetic polymers, microplastics. Where have we heard these terms recently? The spraying for the light brown apple moth. Supposedly, that's what it's for. This is an article that came out 5 years earlier in a publication of Natural History of November 2003. Plastic polymers, it turns out, are sponges for DDT, PCBs, and other oily pollutants. Japanese investigators found that plastic resin pellets concentrate such poison to levels as high as a million times their concentrations in the water as free-floating substances, what has been done to us here. And then just a brief part from an article on reduced bee poisoning. You know how our pollinators are in tremendous decline here. This is Pacific Northwest Extension publication from December 06. Get these two sentences and then I'll be done. Dust and microencapsulated formulations are most hazardous to bees because these materials are similar in size to pollens and tend to stick to bee hairs. These materials can be taken to the hive when they may affect the brood or queen, unquote. We know these were time-release capsules.
Your time is up.
Our relationship here. I think CDFA needs to
Thank
be
you.
Sued.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
John Golder, good afternoon. I just wanted to bring up my experience at the Coastal Commission hearing on March 4th, where I spoke against that the city wanted to keep the parking restrictions at 10 o'clock. And you've all read about it in the paper, and if you haven't read my comments in the Sentinel about the article, I would urge you to do that. I was embarrassed that the city contingent, which consisted of six people, including Lynn Robinson, Michael Ferry, planner, and Marlon Graham, parking supervisor, came down there unprepared for what the executive director of the Coastal Commission asked them to do, present facts that there was some kind of crime wave on Westcliff Drive that could be somehow reduced by these parking restrictions. I was embarrassed that there was no rational argument presented, that the people presenting arguments were trying to instill fear that there was some huge problem out there. I was embarrassed that Captain Clark claimed that the Westcliff lots were seized by crime.
And I'm interrupting John Golder's comments here because these are exactly the same arguments that are used to justify the new laws that criminalize loitering in parking garages and lots. And actually, it's public assembly in parking garages and lots. And there's going to be a protest about this, as I understand it, tomorrow night, although I haven't seen it re-announced on IndieBay.org, at the same place it was last week. For those who are interested, in parking lot number 27, which is at the corner of Front Street and Laurel. That's where the Community Credit Union fronts on that parking lot. And there'll be, I believe, at 9 o'clock, some videos being played there by Andreas Nicholas, who's written about, and some videos have been posted of the police arrival and the ticketing of people for assembling in the parking lot, somewhat similar to what the police tried to do to the drum circle before they were driven back by the community that said, you know, go ahead, ticket us. We'll see what happens next. And the police decided to back off because there were too many people who were peacefully resisting. Here there was a smaller group of people. They were younger. It was late at night. Three squad cars, actually four, showed up, and some new video has been posted on that on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, for those interested in looking at it. It's going to be happening again tomorrow night, as I understand it, at 9 o'clock, though I'm still not sure what's going on because I haven't heard anything from the people who were doing the projecting and the protesting last week, but they said they were coming back, and I'm hoping that they will, frankly. I'm glad that people are standing up for their rights in these lots and doing so together and doing so in a way when there's video to document how stupidly the city council is using the police department, or the police department is making these own decisions itself, because I think it's not quite clear what the chain of command is here. The city council is not supposed to be directing the police department in its day-to-day activities. In fact, what usually happens is the police department directs the city council or puts a lot of pressure on it. This law, for example, though it was pushed by Kennedy, was cooked up by Public Works, the police department, and parking attendants. The law that makes it illegal to walk into a parking lot or garage unless you're going directly through, unless you have a car or bicycle, and then you can only be there for 15 minutes while you're parking or retrieving your car or bicycle. It's really particularly gruesome in its impact on poor and homeless people in their vehicles, because it means they can't sit in their vehicle there for 16 minutes. It also impacts, of course, the entire community. It makes all kinds of innocent behavior, reading a book, working on your computer, all kinds of ordinary things, talking to a friend, criminal. It's criminal to do that after 16 minutes. And this outraged Andreas Nicholas, and so he decided to do a video showing on the wall of the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union. Unless there be any confusion, it wasn't done. It was a silent showing, so there was no sound amplification problem, not that there was any residential situation happening in the area that would prompt a complaint. Nonetheless, the police showed up in force to harass and ticket and drive away this assembly. So when John Golder talks at City Council about how the Coastal Commission did what the Santa Cruz City Council should have done, and what the Downtown Commission should have done, and what the local courts should have done, which is to say, no, you can't violate the Constitution because a bunch of merchants have decided they want to clear away counterculture people from downtown, or they're scared that some members of the community don't like coming downtown because they're afraid of crime downtown, but there's no indication that there's any extra crime in the parking lots or parking garages. No showing has ever been made, but we're going to make it criminal for everybody to go there unless they just park their cars and hustle away, as though that would make it less likely that crime would happen there anyway. The Coastal Commission, a similar kind of argument, a rationale, was used to say no parking after 10 o'clock along the coast, and the Coastal Commission said, this is ridiculous, where's the showing? And they had all the muckymucks. They had Lynn Robinson of the city council. They had Captain Clark, the sole police officer in Santa Cruz who has the distinction, the dubious distinction of actually assaulting me and physically injuring me in front of a city council back in 2005. They had all these people showed up in order to, you know, supposedly justify this, but they had no figures, no stats, no crime particulars, and so the Coastal Commission said, no, you got to allow it at least till midnight, which I don't see why they don't allow it, you know, period. But at least they said to the city...
Irrational argument that at 10 o'clock, people's intentions turn from evil to good, and after 5 a.m. they turn good again. I was embarrassed. Most of all, the executive director brought up the point and interrupted the proceedings to say, the city of Santa Cruz has a number of other things that they've done that they're going to have to get Coastal Commission permits for, and we'll get to that. Everybody in the room laughed. Okay, everybody in the room laughed, and that's because they understand the way the city of Santa Cruz has been doing business out there for the last 30 years.
You ought to be ashamed of the way you had 30 years to get it straight, and the reason you didn't have facts is because you never got a street address for any of the lots or the Lighthouse Field out there. Now, how difficult is that? That's pretty simple management, if you ask me.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
And what Golder means is that he's saying that the reason there aren't good crime stats out there is because they didn't have proper address postings out there. I don't know how accurate that is, but to me the real story is the police department and the city don't feel they have to justify anything. They feel they can do what they want. They've kind of adopted an arrogant attitude. John Wallace, the chief ranger, feels he can post a homeless campsite and then come in and destroy survival property a couple days later, even though he gives no legal place for homeless people to go. Tonight there's space for 160 people in the armory and the emergency shelter program in the North County of Santa Cruz, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 people. 160 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 people. And when they try to set up tents for themselves for no other crime than falling asleep or putting up protective tents, they can not only get tickets, but they can have their property destroyed by Ranger Wallace. Does the city council want to stop this, even though the federal courts have ruled that this is an abusive process for which homeless people may actually get back as much as $2,000 to $5,000 per incident in Fresno, California, in the so-called Kincaid decision? No, the head of our Parks and Rec Department, Dennett Shoemaker, just sails blithely on. The city council under Mayor Coonerty rolls right ahead. City Manager Dick Wilson and Police Chief Howard Scarry, it's business as usual. So it's really important that these issues be brought up. And as Coonerty cuts back, as Mayor Coonerty cuts back time at city council, it gets less and less likely that these issues are going to be able to be discussed in any way. It becomes less and less useful to even set time aside to come to city council to talk. You have so little time to say anything. And, of course, you know, full disclosure, were they ever listening before anyway? Well, probably not in the main, although occasionally council members would hear what I had to say and they'd stop the proceeding and say, let's have a staff report on this. So now even that possibility has been cast aside by Coonerty in the case of over half the agenda items, which are on the afternoon consent agenda. And we're going to hear about that shortly. But here's a little more of the oral communications.
Speaker.
Good afternoon, Council Members. Ed Davidson. I have three complaints, basically, about the what I see as the contempt of the public in your procedures. The latest one, of course, is this requiring your permission to speak at a public hearing, of notice public hearing. I don't need a filter. I need to be able to simply address the issue. I don't need to take a couple of minutes to talk somebody into saying, let's hear it.
And what Ed is talking about is Coonerty's new rule that for all the items on the consent agenda, which can be anywhere from 8 to 30, if you want to, in the past you could say, I want to talk on items 2, 4, and 6, and you'd say, okay, you get 3 minutes on you get a total of 5 minutes to talk on those items. Now, you get a total of 2 minutes to both beg the council to take off these items and explain why you want to talk about them, or if you want to talk about the items in that two-minute period. So it's an extremely limited period of time in which you get to speak on a huge number of items, of which you probably want to speak on 3 or 4 at most anyway, but still, public comment is supposed to be allowed on each of those items if the community so wants to do. Not anymore under Mayor Coonerty.
Hearing, the public should be able to hear it. I would suggest, if you're concerned about time, that the person who requested to be pulled be given 2 or 3 minutes, and anyone else who wants to speak on the item, if they didn't pull it, they'll have a minute or even less to add their comments on it. That might save you a few times, you know, instead of opening the public hearing for everybody to have their full say.
And there's been no showing that huge amounts of time have been wasted on public comments. There was one meeting, I think three or four years ago when a previous mayor, in order to stop me from engaging in public comment on a number of items on the consent agenda, put all the consent agenda items at the end of the evening agenda. He put them ahead 6 or 7 hours. Because of that, I spoke on every administrative agenda item in order to point out that since I don't have a chance to speak during the normal speaking time, I'll speak during the time that, you know, on other items, on relevant comments about them, but items I wouldn't normally have spoken on. And Rotkin and the council subsequently said, oh, well, this is an example of somebody badly using city council time. The fact of the matter is, if a member of the public is speaking off topic, the mayor has the right, or a council member has the right to say, this is off topic, talk on the topic, or else go sit down. That's fair to do. And if you don't do that, if you keep talking off topic, that is disruptive. But to cut back time so that people can't talk about the topics at all is a form of real disruption of the public process. But the real disruption here is being done by the city council itself. And that, of course, I think is what happens far more frequently than the public engaging in any disruption. City Council wants to essentially ratify what the staff does, it seems to me, and they don't want a lot of interference from the public or questions raised or doubts expressed, because that means they have to answer them, and that takes up too much time away from their dinner breaks. And it also means they have to have longer council meetings. And, you know, the other excuse they use is, well, the staff time is being taken up. Well, the City Council meetings are arguably the most well, visibly important part of this of the legislative city council process. They aren't really. It isn't where, you know, things are pretty much decided when they hit city council. But in theory, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where the vote happens.
Suggestion. The second thing that bothers me, and I've tried to talk to you about this before, but that is holding public hearings, such as the one this afternoon on 900 Pacific, in the afternoon. This is not the way this council is supposed to work. We started with evening sessions only, and then we added afternoon sessions for routine kinds of things, which are generally the afternoon sessions. And it bothers me particularly that you have the this item in this afternoon session, because people from that neighborhood can't get to the council meetings in the afternoon, and the evening agenda is not that full.
Your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you. Next speaker. This will be our last speaker because we only have 10 minutes. There's been five speakers.
Vice Mayor Riley.
Actually, hold on, Mr. Tomasi. Mr. Norris didn't speak last week. If you can wait till the 7 p.m. session, it allows Mr. Norris
Robert,
to speak.
You spoke last week. No?
No.
And while it may seem here that Coonerty is intervening on my behalf, and that's nice, the fact of the matter is he could have easily let both of us speak by adding an additional 2 minutes to the meeting. Not that I often have a lot of interest in what Michael Tomasi has to say, and that's not because he doesn't have things to say. It's that he is often so sort of repetitive and grandiose in his opening statements. He kind of puts me off, king of marijuana, that sort of thing. Some people find it amusing. I just find it tiresome. But I know that underneath that, and often following these introductory comments, he often has something relevant to say based on his experience as a vet and as a homeless person and as a person who keeps kind of a street curbside eye on what's going on in the city.
Speak of the 7 p.m. session, Mr. Tomasi.
I'll be here for it, sir.
I second Mr. Davidson's concern about public hearings and the right to speak by the public. I don't think you want to gag us or cut back our time, or you shouldn't. I think you do actually want to cut back our time, but and I'm sorry about that. It discourages public comment. I want to again encourage you to ask for an FYI on war profiteering investments by the City Council, by such groups as Dresser, Camp, and McKee, who you put $2 million for a desal plant into, and other organizations that are profiting from the criminal overseas adventure, which the council supposedly opposes. I'm also concerned that the anti-homeless law designed to deny the poor shelter and parking lots at night, that's Mayor Coonerty's what I call the parking garage paranoia law or the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to enter a parking lot unless you are going through or have a vehicle there, and then if you read a book for 16 minutes, you're engaged in a crime, is being enforced. Last Friday, a citation was issued, and more citations are promised by the police department for, again, innocent public behavior, a peaceful nighttime assembly of people watching a silent video show on the wall of the Community Credit Union in parking lot number 27. It's outrageous. It violates Santa Cruz traditions, and I also think it's unconstitutional to subject the city to various legal penalties once it's brought forward. I'm also concerned about rape investigations. I talked about this recently on my radio show. Jillian Greenside, who was essentially not reappointed to the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women by Mike Rotkin because she raised the issue too fervently that Santa Cruz's rape investigation rate, or conviction rate, or I should say even arrest rate, is 13% compared to a statewide average of about 38, 39%, and that's outrageous for our city, is not being pursued. Instead, you're getting fluff and blather from the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, and particularly the staff member, Kathy Agnon. So act on this. Rape is a real issue. It's in the papers. Something needs to be addressed. And it also deals with homeless people and their vulnerability outside, particularly homeless women. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we're moving on to the consent agenda. That's items 1 through 16 on the consent agenda. Right now, prior to the City Council's consideration of the consent agenda, which is a series of items that we'll act on in one motion, I now will invite the public. Public's invited to comment on consent agenda items. After public comment, any council member may remove a consent agenda item from the consent agenda. Items which remain on the consent agenda will be acted upon in one motion pursuant to a single motion. Items removed from the consent agenda will be considered after the City Council vote.
Now, it's interesting. This is a different wording than he used in the previous council meeting, and indeed different than the meeting before that. He used to say, you now have 2 minutes to explain to us why you want an item removed. That, of course, made it really clear that the City Council itself somehow has a veto power over the right to speak on any particular item, which it does not. The Brown Act guarantees the right to speak on every item. So now what he's doing is saying, well, now you can speak on every item. It's just you're going to have 2 minutes to speak on 16 items. Good luck. He also, those in the know understand that you can ask the council to remove the item so you'll get an additional 2 minutes and so other people can speak on the item if the council in its great wisdom is willing to deign to allow you, the public that elected them, the right to speak on these items, which previously, and which you really should have the right to speak on under state law.
Members of the public on the rest of the consent agenda. Many members of the public may comment on removed consent agenda items prior to the council's action on these items. What that means in normal English is that people have an opportunity now to comment on come speak for 2 minutes about any item or all items. After they speak to that item, if one member of the City Council wants a further discussion or to vote on that item separately, they have the ability to remove that item from the agenda. Otherwise, we'll act on it in one motion. So, would anyone like to speak about any item on the consent agenda? There's 2 minutes.
Donna Dice. Good evening, everyone. I'm requesting that item number 3 on the consent agenda be removed for discussion later. It's never had a hearing. Thank you.
Okay.
And item number 3 is a claim for $30 from Donna Dice for something we've talked about on this show before, which is the illegal ticketing by John Wallace, the chief ranger, in last August, of Dice's vehicle for being in a parking lot out near Lighthouse Field where Wallace had just put up a new sign stating no RVs. This whole procedure was found to be improper, and the state rangers went around about 3 weeks ago painting out the no RVs part of the sign. Nonetheless, the police, the ranger, nonetheless gave the citation, and we wanted to talk about it and get her, so she could get her money back for this ticket. She made this request, and of course the council, we haven't got much time left in the show, but you'll hear that the council completely turned down this request without any comment. So Donna Dice is probably one of the first members of the public who was denied an opportunity to speak on an item on the agenda that personally concerned her. They refused to pull that item from the City Council agenda.
Hey, Davidson, I wanted to speak about item 16. And as it turns out, I'm not opposed to the action, so I don't think that you have to necessarily pull it, but I want to take a minute just to tell you what my concern was. I couldn't find the assembly bill as it was stated in the public notice. The public notice didn't explain what the actual bill was.
And rather than go through the details of Ed Davidson's concerns, which often are they sound a little technical often, but they're often worth considering, I'm going to read the story from indiebay.org, which I wrote, which kind of describes what happened, since we only have about 8 minutes left here. At the 325 Santa Cruz, that's March 25th Santa Cruz City Council meeting, Mayor Ryan Coonerty refused to allow members of the public to pull items off the 16-item consent agenda for public comment and individual vote. Instead, he implemented a public comment limit of 2 minutes for the entire 16 items, or a little over 6 seconds for each item if one wanted to talk on each one. This is the first time Coonerty has so clearly activated this new supposed power of the council to deny the public the right to speak on nearly half the agenda items on the afternoon agenda. I filed a Brown Act letter of complaint demanding that the items he refused to have removed be reheard at the next council meeting with public comment permitted, as is required by state law. Vehicle dweller Donna Dice is an elderly disabled woman who used to HISC, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. She lost her housing. She now lives in a vehicle and is trying to organize RV dwellers in the organization live, living in vehicles excellently, and she can be contacted at spiritdanceropean@yahoo.com. That's spiritdanceropean@yahoo.com. She and her citizen advocate, John Golder, or Jond Golder, if you want to get his Norwegian pronunciation, asked to speak on item number 3. This was a council vote on Donna Dice's claim against the city for $30, the price of the ticket that Chief Ranger John Wallace gave her last August for having her RV in parking lot A out near Lighthouse Field. There's a long story on that, which you can go to on Indie Bay if you're interested. Golder, who has himself been hassled by Wallace in the past and is helping Donna Dice pursue a lawsuit, also asked to have the item removed from the consent agenda for public comment. Removing the item means giving it individual time for public hearing rather than being passed with a simple yes vote with the rest of the consent agenda and no public discussion. City Council refused to allow this under Coonerty's new rule. I also tried to speak on the issue of the new police station subsidies to the downtown merchants, which is agenda item number 7, the city's $400,000 Soquel garage upgrade benefiting business tenants there. This has now been boosted another $110,000 on a cost overrun. So the $500-plus grand is going to go to fund commercial space for incubator-sized tenants, a police substation, and additional space for Oswald's restaurant. Nothing for new bathrooms, no clear indication of why the heavy boost in cost. And I was also interested in asking some questions about the police substation. I was not allowed to do so. Councilmember Rotkin confided in the public afterward that if any members of the public had any questions about the, quote, false claims raised by us in the tiny 2 minutes we were allowed to speak, that they should contact him privately and he would talk to them. Government in private by conference with council member or shadow mayor Rotkin seems to be the new sleek solution to dealing with unwanted public comment. The afternoon agenda, as usual, was packed with items, and only 2 items were on the evening agenda. I talked about this before, where in the past most important business was done at a time usually accessible to working members of the public. Coonerty's new rule banning the public from requiring public comment on consent agenda, banning the public and not allowing them to talk on consent agenda items, is nearly unique to city councils throughout California. It's the only one, in other words. Everywhere else, people can remove items and talk about them. This is because the Brown Act requires, that's a state law, a period of comment on each agenda item. 2 weeks ago, Coonerty and Rotkin backpedaled on the rule. They allowed everyone who wanted to pull an item from the agenda to speak on it separately. This time, all requests were denied. Not one council member objected to this procedure. And what does this mean for the particular case of Donna Dice? Well, Golder himself may be posting a story on the bizarre saga of Dice's recent day in Judge Tom Kelly's court. The bottom line is that Ranger Wallace gave Dice citations for violating this no RVs sign that he had just posted that has since been found to be unjustified and so painted over by the state park rangers. Superintendent Steve Hammack of the City Parks and Recreation Department, superintendent, was asked to provide me the specific law, I asked him, under which this sign was posted that was illegal and was later removed. He and rec boss Danette Shoemaker responded there were no public records on this matter. When Dice attempted to have the ticket reviewed that Wallace gave her, the administrative officer reviewing it was John Wallace himself. So we have a situation similar to what happened back in 2000.
Bill number.
Being interrupted by the city council there. Can't let that happen. So you have a situation of, where the city is making its own decisions that are really impacting poor and homeless people, driving RVs and people who live in RVs away, but doing so without any kind of legal justification. And then when that's brought up, they're finding their own actions okay because they review the same people who issue the tickets are reviewing the actions. I am going to have to leave it there because my time is almost up. Let's go out on this Uncle Bonsai song, and I'll be back to talk to you on Sunday, perhaps, if you want to tune in at 9:30 in the morning on 101.1 FM. You can also check out the protest tomorrow, if it happens, at 9 o'clock at the parking lot number 27, which is the lot at Laurel and Front Streets. Maybe see some interesting videos and check out what's cooking. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Also check out the 2 o'clock Human Rights Organization meeting Saturday at the Firefly Cafe, 131 Front Street, which is just down the way from the Saturn Cafe.
So we'd like to do this song.
I guess the final of the fat song.
The
first one.
The final of the fat songs.
Which was the first fat song,
right.
Really.
It's really the source of all fat. It's a love song about the kind of man that Arnie, that's the other girl, and I think would be really, really great to have once. Well, it's called Fat Boys.
It's a dance song.
Skinny boys got nothing to lean against in bed. Bony arms and shoulders only bruise my head. And when they tried to wrestle me, I beat them pound for pound. Skinny boys got nothing to wrap your arms around.
Skinny boys got visions of godlike qualities. But every time I greet one, there's nothing there to squeeze. All that wasted effort, all that vanity. Skinny boys got visions of immortality.
Something about those muscle-bound boys practicing their clean and jerk. Oiling up their bodies for the shine.
Never like those tan and lean boys. Too much pressure, too much work. Looking in the mirror for a sign.
I just want a baby fat boy.
Double-sized and double-chinned.
Belly big and pillow to my brain.
I just want a spacious lap boy.
Jumping on and sing-grabbing. Loving handles driving me insane.
All that extra weight, all that extra muscle to play with, gives me another reason to stay with the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone cleans the plate. Truly inspired, the last of us clean to just sit by the fire and lick up the fingers of the fat boys, fat boys. How?
For those at home, this would be the dance section. Knock yourselves out.
Skinny boys are losers who seem to try too hard. And every time they talk to me, they won't let down their guard. All that blind emotion, all that foolish pride. Skinny boys are losers with no place left to hide. I don't want no squeaky clean boys, so repressed and so refined. Walking like their feet don't touch the ground.
I don't want no mama's best boy, undeveloped, undefined. Waiting for his chance to be profound.
I just want an overgrown boy, unconditioned, unrehearsed. Fleshy body waiting for the squeeze. Overweight and overblown boys, wet my whistle, quench my thirst. Chubby cheeks just drop me to my knees. All that extra skin, all that extra skin.
last of us lovers will turn up the music and turn on the covers with the fat boys, fat boys. Fat boys, fat boys, fat boys.
Fat boys so massive and fat boys so sweet. Fat boys to fondle and bite. Fat boys to feed me whenever we meet. Fat boys to turn out the light. Fat boys so ample to sample and hold. Fat boys to brighten my day. Fat boys so grand to manage.